Throughout the nation tonight, faithful Democrats are meeting at scores of dinners to honor the founder of their party, Andrew Jackson. Tonight, as he has every year since his election, President Roosevelt will address the Jackson Day dinners. The first formal celebration of Jackson Day took place in 1828 at New Orleans when Jackson was a candidate for the presidency. Since then, the followers of Old Hickory have made the celebration an annual affair. The chief executive is vacationing and will speak from the presidential yacht, the U.S. Potomac, now in Florida waters. The president will be presented by the Honorable J. Flynn, chairman of the Democratic National Committee, who speaks to you now from Washington. Mr. Flynn.
Ladies and gentlemen, the chief executive will speak to us now from the wardroom of the USS Potomac, now in Florida waters. Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States.
Ladies and gentlemen, I am sitting in the little cabin of the little Potomac in the harbor of Fort Lauderdale, Florida, after a day of sunshine out in the Gulf Stream. That I cannot in person attend one of the many Jackson Day dinners, I regret. But it is good that you are again celebrating the memory of a great American leader who believed, fanatically almost, in the principles of a democracy based on the freedom of the ballot box. I try to get away a couple of times a year on these short trips on salt water. In Washington, as you know, the working day of the presidency in these times averages about 15 hours. And even when I go to Hyde Park or to Warm Springs, the White House office, the callers, the visitors, and the telephones all follow me. But at sea, the radio messages and the occasional pouch of mail reduce official work to not more than 2 or 3 hours a day. So there is a chance for a bit of sunshine, or a wetted line, or a biography, or a detective story, or even a nap after lunch. But above all, there is the opportunity for thinking things through, for differentiating between principles and mere methods, between the really big things of life and those other things of the moment that may seem all important today and yet are forgotten by the world in a month. That means that if today the fellow next to you catches a bigger fish than you do, or vice versa, as sometimes happens, you don't lie awake at night thinking about it. Yes, you recapture your philosophy, but in so doing, you do not sit down mentally and become a fatalist. You still seek peace of mind and peace of spirit, but you come to realize that you have to work overtime nowadays and work harder than ever before in your life to make that kind of peace possible later on. It is a fact that I think we all recognize that if we sit down now, we may get run over later. And if our kind of civilization gets run over, the kind of peace that we seek will become a mere unattainable dream. And so that is why, in the comparative quiet of this week, I have become more than ever clear that the time calls for courage and more courage, calls for action and more action. That is why it is appropriate today to honor the name of Andrew Jackson, because he was first and foremost a great American who placed his devotion to his country above adherence to party and provided an ever-living symbol of the rugged, courageous spirit of our people. Responsibility lay heavily on the shoulders of Andrew Jackson. In his day, the threat to the Federal Union came from within. It was a sectional threat, More than that, it was a threat that came from some of Jackson's own people. Indeed, from some members of his own party. It was inspired by a refusal to recognize the sovereign authority of the United States. And by his actions, Jackson placed himself far above both section and party. In our own day, the threat to our Union and to our democracy is not a sectional one. Far from it. It comes from a great part of the world that surrounds us, that draws more tightly around us day by day. Again, to do this job, we Americans, nearly all of us, have risen above any considerations of party politics. Long before Jackson became president, the two-party system of government had become firmly entrenched as a basic principle of American political life. It had shown its value. It had shown its value as a method of obtaining free and open discussion of public issues, formulating new policies to meet new conditions, fixing responsibility in affairs of government as an indispensable part of our conception of free elections. Now the dictators of some lands cannot seem to realize that here in America, our people can maintain two parties and at the same time maintain an inviolate and indivisible nation. The totalitarian mentality is too narrow to comprehend the greatness of a people who can be divided in party allegiance at election time, but remain united in devotion to their country and to the ideals of democracy at all times. In dictatorships, there can be no party divisions, for all men must think as they're told, speak as they're told, write as they are told, live and die as they are told. In those countries, the nation is not above the party as with us. The party is above the nation. The party is the nation. Every common man and woman is forced to walk the straight and narrow path of the party line. Not strictly speaking a party line, but rather a line drawn by the dictator himself who owns the party. In our country, disagreements among us are expressed in the polling place. In the dictatorships, disagreements are suppressed in the concentration camp. Last year, we held an American election in which the people, Democrats, Republicans, Independents, and others, by secret ballot and without prodding by the bayonets of storm troopers, voted for their public officers, local and state and national. And we are determined so to act that Americans will go on year after year holding free elections.